Okay, we're officially starting. This is week eight. And Dad, I'm going to hand this over to you pretty fast. There you go.
Okay. All right. Well, welcome everybody. Week eight. This is wow. It's been a great journey. Mike, for instance, I thought for a minute you were on your smoking break. That would not have been cool. Well,
Are you kidding? Bruce, it's been 57 days. Every single day I count.
we're going to get to that in a second because I think of all the people that had to set a goal, that one had to be the toughest one. I mean, as everybody knows, I set a goal to lose 30 pounds. I went on vacation. I hadn't really thought out this vacation very well. I went to Italy and definitely stayed exactly as far as on the diet. I didn't eat a piece of pasta, no bread. I literally grilled or cooked every day.
You went to Italy with no pasta, Bruce?
No pasta, no bread, man. I did exactly what I'd promised myself I would
The first word that popped into my mind was wrong.
do. Well, you know, again, you just make the choices, but we had great meals, and I actually enjoy cooking, so that was no big deal. There were some compensating benefits. We were in a maybe a 4,000, 5,000 square foot house that was on the ocean, had an ocean view with 4 acres of land. So, you know, you could suffer through not eating poorly. But I was supposed to weigh 193 today, and I weigh 194 and a half. So by the end of the week, I've got to reach that 189 and a half. So it's going to include some extra exercise, but I will get it done. May even get it done later today. I wouldn't mind getting it done on this day. I'll just have to see how much workout I can do. Again, probably the biggest thing for me was making a difficult promise in front of a group and knowing that I was going to keep that promise to myself every day. And I've done that. So I've eaten absolutely nothing wrong for this entire time. When you're in Italy, though, you know, there's some things that you probably didn't think about, but you're not weighing yourself every day, obviously, because you can't. I'm not going to go buy a weigh thing for 7 days, but the exercise, we walked around and everything. So I was probably short some exercise, but as far as the discipline, it stayed exactly on target. When I came back, you know, some really good signs, the belt loops. I don't have any more belt loops to use in any of my belts, so next thing, and this will be kind of fun. I got to go shopping for suits and belts. I have retired 4 suits, and I'm giving them away on Friday to Goodwill, so I don't have any, I'm not going to have any fat clothes to go back to.
Now,
So
Bruce,
the only thing, go ahead, Mike.
I was going to suggest a hammer and a nail for your belt. Just scooch it back a little bit, take a good swing, and you're back in business with the same belt.
And this is from a guy that has 500,000 miles on his car. No, Mike, I'm gonna go splurge and buy a belt or two.
Had to throw that out there, Bruce.
That's funny. I hadn't even thought of that option, Mike. Now I'm going to maybe I'll hang them up just for memory. In other words, okay, this is what used to fit me. You know, that's it's sad because some of those belts, you know, usually those belts have like 4 inches of capacity. So to have the capacity I've had, and you can see where the majority of your life has been by looking at your belt. That's the part that's worn out the most. But I have belts that have wear at the very end. In other words, where it's hard to get it on, and those are the ones that no longer fit at all. And so that's, I don't know, just part of those little things that you like to see. Also, I have a tux that I'm going to wear in October at the I Survived event. And I've worn that the last few years, but there's definitely been varying comfort levels of, you know, putting that shirt in and sitting down hoping nothing pops so someone next to me doesn't get killed by a flying button. But
That was funny, Bruce.
I'm not going to have any trouble. I'm not going to have any trouble this year. So Mike, on your goal, so you've been 57 days without a cigarette, and that's a big deal.
Bruce, I feel like I've had to figure out how to live my life completely over. It's been a strange journey. Some days are a piece of cake, and other days I battle it from the time I wake up. And it's just like I said last time, I realized I've used it as a syrup over anxieties, frustrations, anger. It always comes in handy. And without that mechanism, I chew lots of gum. I walk around. I leave my office on a regular basis. I had lunch last week with Rick Solis, and we were joking about it. I said, yeah, I feel like I got the short end of the stick, that I'd much rather gain or lose 30 pounds. If you pick it, I'll gain it, I'll lose it. It doesn't matter. But I think that in the long run, no, I got the right goal, the best one I could have had. Absolutely the best one I could have had.
Yeah, you know, I think that was what was intended by having this event, the Millionaire Maker, is that it really wasn't so much about making money. We didn't do a lot of teaching. I mean, you were really the talking about the real estate process and making money there, but the intent was to get a self-disciplined person to show up for the rest of your life. And this was the one area where Mike Cantu had promised himself before in, you know, highlighted letters, I'm going to quit smoking, and you hadn't done it. So this was really your toughest goal.
Right, and then Jordan added fuel to the fire, because right after I made that announcement to her, she comes over with a framed 8x10 picture of my grandson and props it up on the kitchen table. getting it from all angles here.
Well, you know, I very rarely go into my bag of clothes for people that are close to me, but in your case, I did, and I didn't know what to expect, because, you know, when we were sitting in the restaurant and with Tony, myself, and you, and I'd asked you about would you be willing to set that goal, and then you said I would try, you know, I came out with some fairly strong statements that you accepted pretty well. I thought maybe we would have like that guy that put some deposits on your front lawn. I thought we might have a moment there where you went, hey, back off.
Bruce, I quickly realized I would be defending my loser of the month card had I given you any objections, or a loser for life card, whatever you want to call it, knowing that this is in my best interest. This is something I want to do and haven't done it and had thought about it, but I just kept lighting them up. And, you know, I told you last time, there's two phases to this, because after the first couple of weeks, I thought, I can write a best-selling book. It's going to be a very short book on how to quit smoking, and that would be just quit putting them in your mouth and lighting them. The end. It would be a one-page book. And I thought, yeah, that's my next bestseller. But then I thought, no, as the days click by, I thought, there's the whole psychological thing there, too.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with habits, period, is that they're like a fallback. Okay, I just got upset. You would be lighting up, perhaps, and I would be searching for a Twinkie or whatever to calm my nerves, or even contemplate. You know, when this is what it forces you to do, and what everybody I hope has done in the last 60 days that set a goal, is realize that there's an automatic mechanism, and this was the whole idea, is to develop a healthier one. You're going to have them. There's no doubt about it. You're going to have something that allows you to deal with surprises, disappointments, things that upset you. They just need to be healthy choices.
Yeah, like this morning, Bruce, the guy whose dog fertilized my front yard, the first thing I thought of after that was I would have lit up a cigarette. But instead, I chewed about five pieces of gum, and all of a sudden I had a big lump of gum going, and I thought, okay, that worked.
Well, and see, that's kind of a healthier habit. But I think what happens, too, is sometimes when you have a big goal and then you reach it, there's an empty hole. And so that's why it's important to have along the way kind of a new habit that starts to gel and get solidified. So, you know, I guess that's after the 60 days is over, we'll have accomplished the first stage of the goal. But day 61, there won't be a public group behind me as far as what I want to eat, because I will have fulfilled my promise. There won't be somebody looking at you saying, oh, you promised you wouldn't smoke. Well, no, you promised for 60 days you wouldn't. So on day 61, you know, that's going to be that'll be an interesting decision that you will have, you'll have to make, or is it something you've already made?
Oh, that decision was made a long time ago, Bruce. See, after the class on Sunday, I did my usual, and I thought, I got till midnight to smoke, and I was out of cigarettes, and out of habit, I bought two packs, and I smoked, three or four of them out of the first pack, and threw that one away, but there was an unopened pack in my glove box, and as I tell my one of my best friends, Dante, I pulled it out and I said, I need you to autograph this, sign it, and date it. And every time I opened the glove box, it was standing up there with his blue ballpoint pen on it, and it was going to be a gift for a smoking neighbor of mine on the 60th day. On day number 50, I was cleaning out my truck. I looked at them and thought, I'll never open these, and I gave them to Justin.
You'll never open them. That's very cool.
No, and that was... something to do with the white and the brown and the color of them and the red and the white. It just became the enemy. So, yeah, I contributed to someone else's bad habit. And he smiled and said, gee, thanks.
So, Jordan's got to be pretty proud of you.
She is.
That's pretty cool. That's a worthwhile payoff.
Yeah, she just checks in with me. Everything's still okay, Dad? I give her a thumbs up, and that's it.
So I go back to that one weekend that we had spent together with a few other investors, and I asked you for a cigarette, and you were horrified. You were actually, your face just went, oh, no. And it's funny that you're trying to protect me from doing what you had been doing to yourself.
Uh-huh. I wouldn't wish that upon anybody. Absolutely not.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a big deal. It really is. And I think what's important is that decision, I don't know if you had, when you wrote the goal, to me that's making a decision, but you had backed off from fulfilling that literally as soon as the day started and you lit the cigarette. Uh-huh. And I remember one of the things Jim Rohn talked about in some of the teachings that he had is that everything affects everything else. And that's the one thing for me on my goal is I can't walk around feeling really heavy and kid myself thinking that is not affecting other parts of my life, because it is. And that's kind of what you've just done, is kind of take away that one area that almost anybody that meets you would go, you smoke, really? You know, in other words, that would occur to them that seems incongruent with the rest of Mike Cantu's life. And now that's not true anymore. I just think that's pretty cool.
Well, Bruce, one of the biggest benefits, and I have felt it for several years, and there's a huge difference now, and that is, you know, I absolutely am obsessed with surfing. I love to do it, and I would find myself getting really winded to where sometimes I had to catch my breath. And, that's one of my goals for next year, the ones I've already set, is to surf more next year than I did this year, but have my endurance and talent level increase dramatically. Mm-hmm. And go back to yesterday, I went surfing in the morning. Aaron Mazzarillo showed up. He's been coming down regularly and learning, and we went out for 2 hours straight down the street and had a great time. He made a comment about how beat up he was, and I said, what are you talking about? I did that. We're going, getting on our bikes and going up to the dog beach. The surf's got to be better up there. And he just looked at me like I was from another planet. We rode our bikes for about a mile and a half up the boardwalk, parked our bikes, and went out for another hour and a half. And then he was just looking at the cliffs he had to climb up to leave and looking at me, and I just smiled and thought, I'm ready to do it again.
Now, this is Aaron Mazzarillo, by the way, is a pretty good athlete who fights really well. So I think that's funny. He can't walk up a hill, but I've seen him fight for, you know, a few rounds and take care of somebody pretty easily. So I just think that's pretty funny.
He just wasn't used to a three-hour-plus paddle around and get abused by the ocean.
Yeah. Leading an expired life is kind of funny. I have Aaron set up.
Did you say expired?
No, I hope not.
That's what I thought you said, leading an expired life. I thought, no, I just broke into the second half, Bruce.
That's funny. No, we'll try that again. Leading an Inspired Life by Jim Rohn. And when it came across to me as a notice, it said, and it said in 15 minutes. And I just had to laugh, you know, because it's it takes longer than that to try and create an inspired life. Jim Rohn, when did you get introduced to him, first of all?
I got introduced to Jim Rohn back in the 90s. A very good friend of mine, he was a private lender, an older guy, he was a friend of Mick's, gave me a box of books and tapes. He was cleaning out his garage. It was mostly real estate stuff, but it was pretty much all of the stuff Jim Rohn had put together up to that point in time. And it actually sat in a box for over a year. I separated the two. I listened to all the real estate stuff, but I put Jim to the side. And then one day, I plugged in some cassette tapes, and I thought, oh, my gosh, where's this guy been all my life?
Okay.
And ever since then, Jim has been my go-to guy every time my attitude goes south. I've got some Jim Rohn CDs. I've got some good old-fashioned cassette tapes, a few DVDs, VCR tapes that I'm sure I'll never watch again. But I think I have everything he has ever written. And I just absolutely love his writing style and the effect it has on me. I don't use the word eloquent for anything except for to describe Jim's style of writing. But I read it and I think...
It's like he thought for an hour for every sentence.
Oh, he takes a page and it gets boiled down into a sentence or a small paragraph, the best words that he could possibly use. He does, for motivation, what Pete Fortunato does for real estate instruction, taking a very complex something and shrinking, and you end up with a sentence that previously you had a whole page that said the same thing. And Jim's right on the money. I love the Leading an Inspired Life book because of the short chapters. I mean, Jim's always been a short chapter guy, but I actually had to go out and buy a new copy of this for this report, or the book report, because I was given the book some years ago as a gift, read it immediately, and I remember I got to the last page. I was about 20 minutes into my reading. I thought, oh, no, I got 40 minutes left. Let's just click right back to the front page and start over again. And as always, I'm underlining different stuff the second time through, thinking, how did I miss this? How did I miss that? So I've always been a believer, your favorite books, if they were good the first time, they're even better the second and third time. And Leading an Inspired Life gets better every single time I read it. I do want my marked up copy back from my daughter someday. I offered to buy her a new version of it and give me back my old copy. And she smiled and said, no, thanks. All the good stuff's already underlined.
So she just skims it and misses the stuff you missed. Oh, it's not good.
Yes, because I have lectured her for years about her mental nutrition as well as her physical nutrition. And prior to having a baby, when she would come in the office every morning, she knew better than to come in without reading something because she was going to get quizzed on it. I didn't care what she had for breakfast physically because I know she eats every morning, but I wanted to know about the mental stuff. And, oh, for the longest time, it was Jim Rohn. She said, it was easy. Get me off her back. She could read a paragraph, or a couple of pages, which is a chapter, and that'd take about 3 minutes. Come to work, share it with me, and we're good.
Then Dad's satisfied, huh?
Dad's satisfied, but yes, Dad. I have bought more copies of this book and handed them out to people in need than any other non-real estate book. And it seems to be that I give this book away when people have hit bottom.
You know what's interesting about the, excuse me, go ahead.
Or they're having a major, major life challenge, that all-consuming life challenge. And I've given them the book, and most of the people won't even open the book to where I've got to follow up and say, please read the first page. Just read one page. Put your cooking timer on 30 seconds. And then I get a big thank you a month or so later. Hey, that was the greatest thing ever.
You know, for me, Rohn, he really did change my life in 3 hours. I mean, he really did. That first night I heard him, and this is 81. I mean, I literally either had been missing other people talk about the concepts, or I had just never heard them. But they were new. It seemed to me this was new stuff. And I've asked you this before in different contexts about branding. Remember, I asked you one time what word had certain instructors captured as a brand. You know when you said, like Ron the Grand, you had mentioned a word and so forth and so on.
And I remember the word for the Norris group. I absolutely remember the word.
Yeah, and I appreciated that too, because you said to me at the time, for your company, it wasn't a real estate word. And that kind of meant a lot to me. And the word that you chose was?
Integrity.
Integrity. And you said you would play
High stakes poker game with any employee there over the phone and never question their hand. Now, yeah. That was easy to say, Bruce, because I don't know how to play poker. But
no,
if I did know how to play poker, I would have that. I would put the same thing out there. Absolutely.
Well, in the sense of Jim Rohn, what one word comes to mind when you think of him? And maybe you've already used it.
That's two words. Life changer.
Okay.
And that was the first thing that came to mind, that properly digested, I think everything you need for a complete turnaround, redo, reconstruction, you don't need a big library of stuff. This book has it all. I mean, that's what I like about this book. He covers the whole sphere of life, and it breaks it down. The chapters tell the story, and then the subchapters within the major chapters, the paragraphs, but he covers all angles. It covers your personal life, your business life, everything to do with everything, and that's what I like about Jim. It's not just focus on one segment of life. Yeah, you take the stuff out of here and apply it to one segment of life, but it's like the universal stuff that you can take that same thing, apply it in your business life, your personal life, solve problems with it, and you can use it over and over in different arenas.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, he's by far and away the best or the greatest influence on my life as a business owner and in business. I owe a lot of success to his philosophies, but none of what he teaches is real estate.
No.
It didn't have to be.
No, but it's a key component to the real estate part of it. Because I'm constantly analyzing. I analyze, overanalyze stuff, but I realize it's a very small percentage of the people that start at the beginning of the trail that actually make a career, a life, a good life out of it, and end up at the end of the trail somewhere near what they had planned on. And I keep thinking, how did I end up going farther than a lot of people? And I really think it was the attitude that I got from Jim Rohn. That so much of it spills back to that attitude, because I look at myself pre-exposure to Jim Rohn and post-exposure to lots of Jim Rohn, and I am truly a different person because of it. I mean, I ask all the time, and I preach it. People will say something to me, and I'll look at them, I'll give them the look, and then they'll mimic me. They'll give me back what they know I'm going to say, and that is, what good could possibly come from that? Mm-hmm. Either an action, saying something to somebody, and I use that as a rule for myself, but that was right out of Jim Rohn. What good can come from that? So if I can't find the good, I'm not going to say it, do it, share it, or anything else. And I call people out on that. My close friends, I put that in the category of constructive criticism, but I use lots of Jim Rohn on my friends. And I beat my friends up sometimes too. I mean, verbally, when they start throwing reasons at me, I say, those are excuses. And then all of a sudden I find myself preaching Jim Rohn to them, and I smile, and hopefully it had the effect I was after.
You know, I think you've captured, and I something I recognized the first time that I was in front of him. He seemed to have a pretty pure intent.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I picked up, okay, of course, you know, people in the seminar business do stuff for money. I just got the sense that it wasn't the driving force of why he was in front of me. When he told the story about the Girl Scout coming to the door and him having, you know, him choosing to lie and say, I've already bought, you know, dozens of boxes, and then he sits on the floor and he cries. There was something that was pure about his intent of why he was standing there. In other words, he wanted to help your life. And force you, and this is, and what you said, and I think that's what kicked it off. It's like he earned the right to get on my case, and I was so impressed with that. I just thought, you know, you're taking so many risks in the first 10 minutes to piss me off, that I respected that, because he was right. He was telling me, if you live in America and you don't end up being financially independent, you have to look in the mirror and say, it's my fault. If you live in California, I mean, this is like a country unto itself. You end up not being well off here. And he really kept kind of grinding that into it, where you're looking in the mirror going, well, I gotta toss all that other stuff I've been using out and get serious. And it boils down to what Jim Rohn is saying, is that you're going to be successful because you've brought the right person to the show.
Now, see, I borrowed so much from Jim that I love helping people that actually are going to implement and apply it and have a better life. I just get such a kick out of seeing an improved life from something I said or did. And I ask a lot of people questions about, how's your business going? Oh, not so good, blah, blah, blah. And then I, point blank, Jim Rohn, who sold you on that program? And people get very, very defensive when I ask them that question. Then I interrupt them and say, well, how's that program working for you? And once again, who sold you on that program? And you can't help but get irritated with that, but at the same time, you realize what you're doing isn't working, and I didn't say that for no reason.
Well, again, that gets back to intent. I remember Rohn saying that one of his seminars, is that you can say some pretty strong things if somebody knows that you care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're just being a jerk, okay, well, then you write that off, and then you can get ticked off. But somebody that cares about you gets in your face and says, from where I'm sitting, you know, you're self-destructing with whatever this habit is.
Mm-hmm.
That gets your attention, you know. And the word that, when I think of Rohn, the word that comes out to me is intensity. I literally can't listen to the man for a CD without going and creating a goal or having trouble sleeping that night, because he kicks off something in me that makes me want to be better.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's cool about this is still in effect, even though he's no longer here. That's a pretty cool legacy. Somebody's not been here for a couple years, and I have access to every word he's ever said or written, and he can still impact my life. I just, you know, as far as a legacy, I can't think of a better one.
Well, it's interesting, Bruce, because I am helping a good friend of mine. He's 25 years younger than me, but he has previous real estate experience, went down a few other roads, and decided real estate is where he wants to concentrate his efforts. And he's a good friend, and I offered to help, and he says, I need some direction. The first thing he got, the 5 major pieces to the life puzzle by Jim Rohn. I said, we start here, and then you read the Treasury of Quotes by Jim Rohn, and we worked his way through 4 Jim Rohn books before we got to the first real estate book. And we discussed those, and it was think that is the most important part. Anyone can learn the physical mechanics of it, but without the right attitude, the game plan, and the thought process, I'm not sure how you get it done.
Well, I think it's also, you and I are in the same boat, in that people would look to us and want some direction or some advice from the experiences that we have. And usually I don't want to commit that kind of time an effort until I see some signs that they're serious. And so, I mean, I've had people come to me that are, let's say, within the family realm, the relative realm, whether it be distant or whatever, and just, you know, said, well, I need a house. Okay. And, you know, I didn't really want to just take one off the shelf and say, here, you know, I could have made 30 grand, but here, I'll give it to you. I didn't ever want to do that. But I would say, okay, well, here's a book. And so, and then after the book, then I need you to save for a certain period of time. I need you to save 5 grand. When you got the 5 grand, you read the book, come back. I've never had anyone come back.
Then they won't. And when you said, I need a house, I just smiled so big, Bruce, because up until I was a full-time buyer, I didn't realize that houses were given to people. And that that thought process never even crossed my mind, that you do what you do, you scrape together your down payment, you get something that you can't afford that should probably be tore down instead of fixed up because that's all you can afford, even though you really can't even afford that. And I just thought that was my preconceived notions of the way this worked. And no, I'm still surprised. In fact, I just heard a story yesterday about somebody that, young lady, filthy house, Canyon Lake, nice property, sold it for $125 cash. And the guy was scratching his head saying, I don't understand, because they paid $250 for it. She paid $250 for it. I said, she didn't buy that house. It was given to her. If it's 2 years that she's been living there and it's so filthy she has to move to an apartment, I assure you she didn't spend $250,000 and then sell it for half that. Mm-mm. Someone gave her that house. It was like I was eating lunch the other day, and the four-door brand-new black Ferrari pulls in front of the sushi place I was at, and the lady drives it up over the curb in the parking stopper, and I watched the fiberglass air dam fold underneath. She runs into the beauty supply place, grabs her stuff, jumps in the car, backs up, and I watched it flex out about 4 inches and leave some paint on the curb. And it still had the paper license plates on it, and I turned to my friend and I said, she didn't buy that car. She did not buy that car.
You know what? I think it's funny you say that, because that's, you know, it put a smile on my face, because you can tell the difference if you sweat and worked your way to something and when somebody's given something. Very big difference in how they take care of it and appreciate. There's no appreciation of the process because there's no blood and sweat.
I mentioned, Bruce, that I still wash my own truck.
I don't know. At 500,000 miles, it may not survive one of those machines.
I won't take that personal. I drove it home today at 80 miles an hour with the air conditioner on high and drove like a champ.
You've got to send a picture of that truck to the CEO of Toyota. I think they'd give you a new one. I really do.
I thought you were going to say the Smithsonian.
No, but then we'll see Mike Cantor driving recklessly since he didn't pay for the truck they gave him. I don't know. you know, I think one of the things that impressed me about Roan, and it's the very first chapter of this book, it is this word discipline. And, you know, when you're – one of the things that's always been distasteful to me in the seminar business is the run-to-the-back process of – this is easy, you don't need a thing in the world, you don't need money, you don't need skill, you don't need anything. Man, he didn't come across that way. And this is the first chapter that he's basically saying, you have a responsibility, and one of the things, the biggest thing you can do is be able to force yourself to do the necessary things.
Selective discipline.
Yeah. You know, and that's... just the process of, you know, usually in the beginning, what you're trying to do doesn't come easy or natural. So there's a process that you go through in almost everything that you want to try and do that is hard because this is new, a new category of speaking to people about a house, you know, dealing with people that are suspicious of your motives, and I'm talking specifically about the house buying business. There was a lot to it that, you know, you had to be disciplined to go through the whole process. But I don't know how you can't be honest with somebody and not emphasize that the word discipline is going to, in fact, be very necessary for your success.
Now, see, Bruce, I tell people all the time, this real estate business is simple. It's the farthest thing from easy you will ever, ever, ever encounter. But the concept is really simple. It's the mechanics of it, they're not easy. We were talking about discipline, Bruce, and I study people with discipline. How do they do that? And one of my big influences was back in the late 80s when I was developing condos in West LA, Brentwood, that area. I had two business partners, and one of the business partners was he was a senior engineer at Northrop, but he was the youngest senior engineer ever. And he quit at, I think it was 34 years old, and people just thought he was absolutely crazy. And he was going full-time development, already had a good run, but his job was getting in the way. He had a little house in Mar Vista with a detached two-car garage on the alley, and he had built a office room, 400 square foot over a two-car garage with stairs leading up to it. That was his home office. But okay. He would get up in the morning, eat breakfast with his wife like he always did, have coffee, parked out on the street in front of the house. He would get in his car. He would drive it around the block. He would pull it in the alley with his suit and tie on and march up the stairs and go to work. And I always wondered, why do you do that? And he said, it's part of my discipline. That gets me in the work mode. Sometimes I'll stop at the donut place and get a coffee if my wife isn't around in the morning. But for the most part, I do this as a discipline to get me in the right frame of mind. And I thought, wow, that's powerful. Make note of that.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the daily disciplines that you implement?
First of all, the reading part. I think everybody knows that. That's just non-negotiable. I split my reading this morning. I knew that I was going to be doing the book review, so I spent some time in that. But I'm rereading Think and Grow Rich for about the 10th or 15th time. I don't know. It's a nice leather-bound version of it, but I spent time on that. My daily disciplines, Bruce, I go over my list of rental properties every day. How are they doing? These are the things that have supported me for years that are going to take care of me for the rest of my life. How are they doing? What repairs need to be done? That's something that every single work day, and it takes maybe anywhere from a minute to 5 minutes to go down the list, everybody in order. That's one of the things. I have the post-it note that's on my phone in my office. It's actually on the base of the phone, but it's the post-it note that says, what did you do to buy a house today? When I go into my office, I'm a house buyer, so that's a daily discipline. I have to be doing something geared towards buying houses with equity.
Okay.
Now, my exercise, that is another non-negotiable daily discipline. I think I've mentioned that to you, Bruce. I was on again, off again, never made it to the 7-day mark. And, I was in my mid-40s, and I remember I stood in the full-length mirror in the bathroom, and I looked, and I turned sideways, and I went, whoa, what's this? And right then and there, I decided I've never really been interested in that look and came up with a minimal exercise program, but it was also because my lower back's bothered me since I was 16. I have a slightly bulging third disc up, and I was told that I've got to strengthen that or go to the chiropractor for the rest of my life. I don't like that plan. So no, I exercise every morning before you get in the shower. That is absolutely non-negotiable. Today was day 1569 without missing that.
That's 6 years.
No, we haven't hit the 4-year mark yet. Wait a minute,
okay,
we passed 4 years. Let's go 365 times.
Yeah, you're right. Five.
Okay, I'm approaching the 5-year mark on that one. And that's just the basics. Push-ups and sit-ups. I rotate sit-ups and crunches every other day.
Okay.
That's non-negotiable.
But it's every day, and I think that's, you know what's interesting, and I've had people comment on this, is that they really appreciated getting back into a forced reading habit. And I myself have to tell you that I had thought that the equivalent was driving around listening to books. And this has really changed my opinion of that, because when you're driving and listening, I mean, to me that's better than listening to music or whatever, but there's a very different experience sitting down and thinking in quiet and where you're not diverted, you're not having to think, okay, the guy pulled in front of me or whatever. There's a very different outcome when you do nothing but concentrate on what you're reading.
Bruce, the term I use is pause and reflect. As I read, I'm constantly, sometimes I will only read 4 pages in an hour because of the pause and reflect. Let's take down some notes, let's underline it, let's really think about what you just read. And as you're listening to a book on tape or somebody speak, they say it, bam, they're on to the next thing. I know when I have done public speaking, I probably deliver too much because I think that's information overload. But that's one of the things I love about reading is I pause and reflect constantly as I read.
Yeah.
And that's, how can I apply this to my life? How does this affect me? It's just the whole thought process.
You know, I think that's maybe one of the things that this was a pretty fast-paced 8 weeks where you're reading a book a week. So that's been pretty demanding, and a lot of people probably, really were overwhelmed by that and maybe didn't keep up. But
me,
the reading every day, the everyday part of this discipline is really a secret of very successful people is they definitely have daily disciplines that they don't break, and the end result is they just become much more capable than people that who do it sporadically. There's a big difference.
Well, I've accepted the fact, Bruce, if it's a daily discipline, you're not allowed to go to bed without doing it, and I'm really not a very active night person, and I don't want to have to do a whole bunch of stuff, and like I said, I make up rules so that I've got to abide by my own rules. The exercise has to be done before you get in the shower. Otherwise, you're going to be smelly Mike all day, and I start my day with a shower before I leave the house, so I've got to have the exercise done. And now as far as the reading goes, I can read at night, and a lot of times I'll read a little bit in the morning. I always read in the morning, but a lot of times I'll read a lot more than an hour's worth, but most of it gets done in the evening.
When you read, and this has always been interesting, I've taught a fair amount of courses. I think you've been in every one of them, and it always dawns on me that you know 100% pretty much of what I'm going to teach. And yet you're there.
Bruce, you say it differently than the way I read it, and you can hear the same thing seven or eight different times, but the ninth time was delivered properly that had the right impact. And Jim Rohn kept popping up over and over again that he said stuff that I've already heard, but it was either the tone of his voice, the way it was written, that it had the impact. And also, mother, repetition being the mother of all skills, learning, whatever, however that goes, the repetition part of it. I reread good books because they did it for me the first time, and you always deliver it in a way that has impact where I get a bunch of good notes. But and more than anything, Bruce, I am there always for inspiration too, that without my inspiration, all of the knowledge that I have just lays dormant. And until I am inspired to do something, it just sits there. So I'm constantly looking for inspiration and motivation.
What is the big why that drives what you do now?
The big why is to maintain what I think is just an unbelievably wonderful life that I have. That I continue to do what I do to preserve everything that I have and the way I get to live. I started griping this morning and I caught myself. I thought, wait a minute, it's 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm wearing shorts and a t-shirt. I'm on the freeway with no traffic. I got to do my thing this morning. I'm heading to work, but I really don't have anything pressing there. Kim's going to handle everything. And I just went through the whole list of things I'm grateful for. And once again, I thought, okay, that did it. But more than anything, Bruce, to just keep going the way I have been going. That is, my grandson's a huge why, my daughter's a huge why, my brother, my family, my friends. I have lots and lots of whys, but the biggest one is the overall picture of my existence on this planet. I constantly feel privileged every day. I think, wow, how did this happen? I would have been fired again. I would have been fired every single day last week. And I get this mental picture. The picture I had this morning was, it's 10 o'clock, nobody around me, I'm on the freeway, I've got several things to do, but I can juggle them in. This sure beats bumper-to-bumper traffic, heading to a high-rise building with no windows in the office I'm working in, going to a padded cubicle with polyester pants and slip-on pleather shoes and a short-sleeve button-up shirt and a clip-on tie. And I thought, I was speechless when I painted that picture. All of a sudden I thought, no, my head won't even fit on that image I just created.
There's in the second chapter, it talks about personal development, and I don't know how you feel about the term self-made, but the way this, there's a principle called the principle of self-making, and I consider that very different.
I agree.
When you think of the difference between the two, what is self-making versus self-made?
Self-making, I'm going to use different words. The will to prepare to win is more important than the will to win. That's how I interpreted that, the self-making versus self-made. Self-made, you're done. Self-making is an ongoing process, and I will be a self-maker. I just love that term.
Well, it's a choice, too. it's a choice that allows you to dream beyond where you are. Because of what you said, it's an ongoing thing, and you get to a certain point, and you can even change gears. In other words, you can use these disciplines and walk them over to a whole new venture, and you're light years ahead of someone that doesn't have all those things in place.
And Bruce, I don't like the term self-made.
No, that's why I asked the question in that way, because self-made is arrogant and not
but
true.
But it's also the past tense, and you're done. You're made.
Yeah.
It's over. You made this. Okay, you made whatever it is you made, and I've always had the attitude, my best is yet to come. And I truly am inspired and looking forward to it. I have no idea what it is, but I know my best is yet to come. And if you're self-made, well, you already made it, and what are you looking forward to? Self-making, okay, now we're making the future for my best.
Yeah, and I think part of self-making is you choose a Jim Rohn as a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
Self-made sort of smacks of, I didn't need anybody's help, I got here all by myself, which is not really true.
Oh, no, and nobody that I know in this business got there by themselves, maintains it by themselves, and if they did that, I would think, wow, that was probably a pretty lonely existence there.
And I think most of the time it's baloney. I remember, I just came to mind. I remember talking to a guy who said he'd never been beaten in racquetball. And I said, really? And I was dumbfounded. I couldn't understand how that could happen, because I don't know how you get good enough to beat everyone you ever play. And I just thought, well, I got to play a guy that's never been beat, because I just wanted to see. And he never scored a point. And I just remember thinking, okay, I guess you have to be pretty safe on where you participate so you can say that.
Now, see,
you know?
Now with racquetball, I couldn't say that. But as you're telling the story, I thought, I could say that for many things that I've never attempted.
Right. If you're in the playing field, I mean, and you know what? It's kind of an interesting thing about, let's say, a boot camp that takes some risks, where, you know, we're doing that now, where, you know, we're going to be making live calls and stuff. How many times have you hung up the phone and said, well, that was just completely a stupid thing I just said?
Endless times, Bruce. I can't even put a number on it. I cannot even. And
it's part of being in the playing field.
Well, what you just said about the racquetball reminds me, and I've said it publicly, that the only people who aren't making any mistakes are the people that aren't doing anything. That it's part of life. Nobody I know got the complete set of instructions with all the blanks filled in and went out and implemented it perfectly. Nobody.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's life's full of mistakes there. And, you know, I look back and I think I'm probably at 50-50. Maybe a little bit more things have worked out than haven't, but so many haven't worked out. But I thought, we don't know until you try. And you don't try until you've got some optimism and some motivation, which Jim gave me.
When you look at your library, what would be the breakdown of real estate versus non-real estate? Would you say? And do you cull that from time to time and toss things, or do you just
absolutely, Bruce. I have my A library in the home office. Then the B library is out in the garage. That's about 20-foot long shelves, 3 or 4 high. And then the C library is in the basement down at the office. And I've been getting rid of stuff out of the B and C library. But, Bruce, I'm actually standing in the home library with the A pile of stuff here. And it's appearing about two-thirds real estate, one-third self-improvement, motivation, biography stuff, sales stuff. Let's call it 60% real estate, 40% other stuff. So it is heavy on the real estate side because I'm obsessed with it.
It's an interesting thing, first of all, that you are so willing to go get more education. when I, and I did mention this, you know, sitting in a seminar that I'm giving, I just recognize that I know you already know what I'm about to say, unless it's very specific to, you know, like timing research or something that I just did. But you're still willing to be there for me and a lot of other people. And I think that's, apparently you find it beneficial, you wouldn't be there.
Exactly, Bruce. And
I think that's important. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I am as stingy as any human being ever was with my evenings, weekends, my non-work time. But it's, once again, it's for the inspiration that I get out of it and the motivation. That I remember the first real estate class I ever went to, the instructor, about 10 minutes into it, he made a comment. He said, when you're green, you grow. And when you're ripe, you rot. And I just have this horrible visual. It really smells bad, too. Anything rotting smells bad. And I think that can't possibly be me. I don't want to start rotting. Therefore, I need to stay green. I need to have constant input. I need to be motivated. And it's the nuggets that I'm looking for. If I leave with one little concept, I thought that was a day well spent.
You know, the first seminar in real estate that I took, I taught. And I look back at that and think how stupid that was.
Because, interesting.
Yeah, that's really true. I never took anybody's seminar. I have a brother that bought some of that, you know, some of that stuff that was on TV, and I remember listening to it and talking to my brother saying, honestly, I don't think the guy's ever bought a house in his life. So it kind of turned me off, because my experience in the real world versus the experience I read in the book, it was sort of like somebody with no experience writing a textbook on how to be a real estate investor. And so, but I paid dearly for stuff because the lessons I learned were from, you know, real mistakes that cost sometimes tens of thousands.
When you said that you taught the first real estate class that before you took a real estate class, I put myself into your shoes and I thought, oh, no, that would have been a train wreck 3 minutes into it because I knew nothing about real estate. And you know the story. I spent the weekend 2 days with my buddy Chuck learning 101 ways to buy real estate with no money down, but on Sunday evening on the way home, very seriously, I looked at Chuck, and I was hoping he had the answer. I said, Chuck, any idea what that mortgage thing they talked about all weekend was? And he didn't even look at me. He says, no, I was really hoping you knew. So for me to get up there and teach a class, Bruce, that would have been a complete disaster.
Well, I didn't teach anything until I got invited, you know, probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 years into business. And you know, it was Jack Fullerton that had me speak in front of his group, and I'd already bought, you know, a fair amount of homes at that time, at least I thought so. I'd probably bought over 100 anyway, and I just knew an awful lot. And then when you run across other people and you realize, oh my gosh, what a time saver that would have been. You know, I probably wouldn't have built a house on a lot I didn't own, you know, that stuff like that. You just go, oh well.
But it seems to be a pattern in my world, Bruce, to where I come up with these great ideas, they turn out to be disasters, and about 6 months later I get the information on how to avoid that mistake.
Yeah, and I think that was part of this reading list to me is like a go-to set of books. Every financial mistake I've made, every donation I've made of $250,000 was in that really simple book that we had to read.
Uh-huh.
And you just go, okay, well, that I should have read that one more time before I wrote that check.
And one of the things, Bruce, I notice a pattern. I mean, people get into the real estate business, and they have high expectations, but a lot of people have a tendency to be information junkies, and they keep going and going and going, getting all the information but not implementing any of it. And I think with the Millionaire Real Estate Investor book and the Jim Rohn book, if those two books were handed to somebody and said, read Jim first, read the Blue Book second, don't buy anything else. Go implement everything you can possibly implement for the next couple of years. I think most people would be just fine, and they'd be in a better place than they were before they took those two books.
Yeah, there's some books that are just that good. And Inspired Life, is definitely one of those. And I think what I was trying to relate to, you know, me teaching a real estate seminar class before, or, you know, teaching one before I ever took one. With Jim Rohn's stuff, it's sort of like that, only not real estate connected. Trying to solve all this stuff on my own, I was so glad he showed up when I was 28. because he gave me a roadmap where I was inspired and I had some instructions to do something and saying, okay, I understand. I can write a set of goals. I can will that to happen through a process of discipline and action. I just got excited that I actually knew some of this was in my control. I, for whatever reason, I had missed that class.
No, and like I said, when I first got exposed to Jim in the early 90s, I just thought, oh, my gosh, where have you been all my life? I really needed you in the late 80s, mister, and he would have been a huge help in the late 80s. But he wasn't around in my world, and once I got exposed to him, I feel so fortunate to have been exposed to his thought processes. They were absolutely life-changing.
Yeah, well, I'm glad he had that effect on you. I thought, for me, he's definitely the main mentor of my business life, without a doubt.
The fact that you had him at the first Millionaire Maker, and I actually got to have one-on-one time with him, I thought, oh, this just was icing on the cake.
Well, you know, the inspiration to lose that weight was I had so much respect for him, I refused to introduce him being on discipline. That literally was the reason that I went about and lost 50 pounds in 100 days, is I did not want to diminish what this man had done for me by showing up on discipline. One of those things that, again, there's connective tissue to where I'm going to introduce you, you know, 50 pounds overweight, but I'm doing really well over here. That didn't seem congruent to what he taught me.
No, and I did make it a point not to blow smoke on him.
That's funny. Well, Mike, I think we're
out of time
at the end of this segment. So,
wait a minute. That hour just flew by?
Yeah, it sure did.
I was thinking we were about halfway. Okay. I have not been paying attention to the time at all.
Yeah, I wouldn't either, except for I know we have to stop it. So.
Yeah, people are on lunch breaks.
Mike, thanks so much for, you know, doing what you said you were going to do. I had no doubt, by the way, that you would. I know you.
Well, thank you for the confidence, Bruce. Like I said, I couldn't defend my loser position, and that was the glaring thing at me. That's why you didn't get resistance, because I thought I would be fighting for the stupidest thing I could possibly think of. Let's fight real hard for something that will shorten my life.
And I was in the mode I would have pointed that out to you ever so gently at first, and then maybe not so gently until.
Bruce, I'm old enough and wise enough to know when I'm on the losing end of a conversation. I've talked to enough people that I thought, okay, he got me. He got my yes, and I thank you for it, Bruce. I really do.
Well, my pleasure. I'm glad Jordan used that final wedge. That's very cool.
Oh, yeah, not only is it the 8x10 picture I'm looking at, and he's smiling at me, there's a little blue palm print, and there's a new card on there that says, Happy Grandparents Day 2014, Love Maverick, with his palm print. I thought, okay.
Yeah, that's worth hanging around for.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Mike, thanks so much.
All right.
Thank you, Bruce, and I will speak to you guys later, and have a great day.
Okay, Mike, thanks a lot.